You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
Well, that's disappointing. You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Descent. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Colin from England.
Colin from England. How's it going, Colin? You haven't been on for a while.
No, it's been a while, yeah. No, it's going good. Just surviving lockdown and the country falling apart at the seams. But yeah. But unlike some people, I don't have to worry about hairdressers. So, you know, there's always a plus point.
Yeah, I suppose. You don't want to piss off people that know how to use shears easily.
No.
So before we started the show, James was kind of talking about how he needed to get a haircut because he hasn't had a haircut in 3 months. And Colin, you mentioned, well, you haven't had a haircut in 15 or 20 years. Me either. I haven't. I think I told the story about my narcoleptic barber. He used to do $7, $8 short flat tops. And they were really good, bush wax and all, and my hair would stand up for about an eighth of an inch. And then he retired, and I couldn't find anyone who could do a short flat top. But worse than that, I started spending $30 for a haircut. I said, that's insane. So I went to Kmart, got myself a set of clippers, and I've never looked back. I just buzz it down to 1/8 of an inch each time. So, James, go find yourself some clippers and just, you know, take it off.
Yeah, I just can't be bothered. you know, I barely shave anymore, let alone we'll be able to orchestrate a haircut.
Basically, he's embracing his inner hippie.
Well, there have been two occasions where I've actually managed to get a decent beard, And it's always disappointing having to shave it off at the end. So, although I don't quote-unquote shave, I kind of shave every 2 weeks or so it doesn't get, you know, Riker-ish or impressive in any way, shape, or form. Mm. And I have to say, the reason why is that I'm still on call to go into work whenever they need me. So they could come to me tomorrow and say, hey, we really need you into the office, you know, on Monday or on, you know, with a day's notice. And I don't want to have to turn up looking like a nut job. So I try to keep things more or less in play, but the hair is getting a little bit wild because I've got, you know, despite the you know, obvious loss of the battle of keeping, you know, a dignified amount of hair on my head, it is kind of curly-ish at the back, a bit like, the only thing I'll describe it as first season Frasier. Mm. It gets very big at the back, and it's kind of a bit of a, it's not an afro, but you know what I mean, it is curlier than your average. I've not been able to grow it out long enough where it actually falls down by its own weight, but I think it's too curly for that anyway. That's not my main worry about lockdown. My main worry about lockdown is that I haven't managed to get to the dentist in a while, and oh, I got tooth pain the other week. That's enough to make you upset about the world.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Dentist offices are closed here, except for emergencies, which means if you have to make them come in, they're going to charge you for it. So.
Well, I actually don't understand. Well, why are dentists closed? Well, why are they closed? I don't get it. Why are they closed?
To limit contact with other people.
Well, one extra person. Look. I shouldn't be able to buy, like, you know, ice cream, but not be allowed to have a dentist. Those two things shouldn't coexist. Those two states of the world. I shouldn't be able to go and buy a car, yet not be allowed to go and see a dentist. Those two states of the world shouldn't exist. So,
when you go to buy a car, the guy doesn't like lean into your mouth and have a look at your teeth.
Yeah, but they always have masks on when you go to a dentist, right? It's not as if, up until now, they've been like...
He's actually in your mouth. A car salesman doesn't actually get in your mouth.
Well, the thing is, a dentist, right, a dentist should be able to... They should be able to pay for me to take a test to be non-infected of the people that work there. I don't think it's... I'm just a little surprised that we've closed dentists, because not everywhere has closed dentists. France never closed dentists.
The weird thing with the dentist closing is if you need emergency treatment, you can get emergency treatment.
Yeah.
Well, it depends what you mean by emergency treatment. And so in the event that someone has an axe and takes it to your face, then yes, you can get emergency treatment. But it's more of the... It's the kind of emergency that you don't ever want to be on the receiving end of. I don't know how ubiquitous this kind of story is going to be. But in the UK, we have an emergency phone line like 911 to call when you're ill, and the ambulance will come along. Of course, they have that in America. We also have another one, which is for less severe emergencies that you can call. And it used to be NHS Direct, but I'm sure it's been rebranded since then. Anyway, you dial up and you get a nurse or similar on the other end of the line, and they ask you a couple of questions to assess how ill you are. And whenever I have dialed that number, and I think I've dialed like 3 or 4 times in my life, what you realize very, very quickly, no matter how much pain you think you're in no kind of pain whatsoever. Because, unless you're able, they will ask you questions like, how many orifices are you currently bleeding out of? And when it's none, you start feeling bad about wasting their time. I think there is medical treatment available for certain people that are in real dire situation, but I've never felt that I've passed that threshold, despite having trouble sleeping a couple of nights due to toothache. Anyway,
so here are the latest craziness of the United States. A couple things is, they're thinking about doing another stimulus check, which, hey, another $2,400 would be nice. But, okay. So, the police in Minneapolis, Minnesota arrest this guy. I don't know if he resisted, if he fought, whatever it was. They ended up on the ground. While they're on the ground, one of the cops has his knee in this guy's neck. I can't breathe! Well, generally, the idea is if you could say you can't breathe, obviously you're breathing. So they ignore it. And, of course, this guy goes limp and he becomes unresponsive and dies. And now, because of that, there has been 6 days of rioting and protesting at night here. So we were under curfew from 8 p.m. until 6 a.m. The last couple days, things seem to have quieted down, so they dropped the curfew, but we stayed in a state of emergency. Well, I guess now they're planning huge protests, and in which up to 4,000 people will be involved. So it's kind of like, shit, man. I don't know if we should just stay home and arm ourselves or what, but... It has been absolutely insane here. So, I get this, this cop killing this guy was bad, and he should pay for it. Personally, I believe the family should be able to put a knee in his neck and let him die out that way. But, how is walking up and down downtown Omaha, Nebraska, busting out windows and looting stores, how does that justify at all? You know what I'm saying? People are angry that this happened. They're so angry that they got to steal a stereo out of a business. Does that make any sense? And well, as it turns out...
I'm sure no one's advocating people should go and be able to steal a stereo, right? Yeah. But actually, one thing you mentioned now, he might have just called me, not laughing in a humorous sense, but you said, what should we do? Stay home and arm ourselves? You do realize that that option is not available to pretty much any other country in the world. The idea that the way you get around, you know, police killings and, you know, violence on the street is to stay home and arm yourself. That's going to be a raising of stakes, isn't it? Where does it end? Where does it end when everyone is armed so that everyone else needs to be armed, so that all the police need to be armed? Obviously this particular story is broken through across the world, and it doesn't make the US look particularly good, I'm afraid.
No, we're not. We're nuts about this, and at some point it's got to stop. We can't just keep carrying this on. But I mean, there's no end in sight. Anyway, so that's what's been happening to us lately. So, all right, we might as well head on. Let's see. So, synopsis for Descent is the Borg begin a new offensive against the Federation, but this time they're acting as individuals. Data experiences his first emotion while fighting with them, and this is the season 6 finale, episode number 26 of season 6. First aired on June 21st, 1993. Teleplay by Ronald D. Moore, story by Jerry Taylor. Interesting. Directed by Alexander Singer. Guest stars include, oh yeah, Professor Stephen Hawking as himself, John Neville as Isaac Newton, Jim Norton as Albert Einstein, Natalia Nagulich as Alana Nechayev, Brian Cousins as Croesus, and we also have a couple guest stars, Richard Gilbert Hall as Bosus, Stephen James Carver as Tayar, and of course, Majel Barrett is the voice of the computer. So, what do we think about this one? Colin, you're our guest. You go first, sir.
As an overall episode, I think it's good. It does suffer from padding, which is common in two-parters, because they have to fill up the time slot before they run out of story. So you do get a fair bit of padding. But we also get a lot of firsts in this episode. This is also the only episode where a person actually plays themselves, which is Stephen Hawking. So it's the only episode of Star Trek when someone actually plays themselves, and you're talking like over 800 episodes near enough. So that's quite phenomenal.
You're excluding the fact that in Star Trek V, Shatner played the Shatner in that one.
Huh? Yeah, but he wasn't the Shatner, was he? He was Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
In all but name.
Yeah, but you know. But this is actually the first time someone actually plays themselves in complete person. And it's also the first, we get two new ships in this one. We get the Crazy Horse, which is the first ship named after a Native American. And we get the Gorkon, which is the first ship named after a Klingon Chancellor. So... There's lots of things in. Also, Beverly's in charge of the ship, and she doesn't crash. So you know, I should imagine when she handed back control, she'd turn around to the end and go, "That's how it's done, girl."
When you're in a big position, you should try to do this too. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so for me, I realized watching this episode. You know, I realized that one of the greatest minds in all of human history was watching another greatest mind in all of human history, and I was even taking notes about it, too. Okay, no, I'm kidding. I'm not the greatest mind in all of human history. That's James. But then I did almost oversleep today, so again, I'm sorry, guys. I had to rush through these notes, so I'm not up to speed, really, completely. But anyway, the first time I saw Stephen Hawking, boy, that was thrilling. And I just loved having him in this episode. I wish it didn't have to be on the holodeck. Well, obviously it had to be on the holodeck. What I mean is, I wish they could have found a way to extend that scene. Am I alone in that, guys?
Well, the scene itself doesn't actually play into the story at all.
At all.
It's literally just like Stephen Hawking's like Star Trek, how can we get him into an episode? And that's literally all it is. It doesn't do anything to the story. It doesn't play into anything. It's completely disposable, but it's just so they can say, well, Stephen Hawking did Star Trek, you know. And even the hand he plays 4/7. So it's 40. So he gets the 47 in. Stephen Hawking gets the 47 in.
That's good. I don't know. I wish if they could have saved this for a different episode where they could have expanded on this, where other people could have also been in this as well. But, okay, so we get...
Well, yeah, because doesn't Barclay use Einstein in another episode?
The nth degree. Yeah.
So Einstein's in another episode. So, you know, they could have done something like that where Stephen Hawking is in another episode.
That would be nice, but unfortunately we never get that, so. Okay, well, anyway. Now, I'm going to say something. It's in my notes before I started to watch the episode. I say that, unfortunately, it doesn't help the rest of the episode. Then I watched it, and I no longer believe that. So, we'll talk about what I mean by that later. So, James, how about you?
Okay. A bit of history here. Mm-hmm. I think I've mentioned before that I watched Star Trek when I was growing up. I think I must have been around 11 or 12. I'm still of the opinion, I'm pretty sure that I saw Star Trek first in a foreign country when I was still living in Spain. And I seem to remember that the first episode I ever saw was The Naked Now. Now, I remember when I was, you know, 11, 12, 13 or so, you know, I watched a bit of it on TV and I caught, you know, season 3, season 4, season 5 on TV. I remember that explicitly. But there was a point when I was around 15 that I decided that I was going to start buying the VHS tapes that were being released in the UK. And Timescape and Descent Part 1 was the first VHS tape I bought of Star Trek Next Generation. So I had a TV and a video in my room, and I remember specifically going out and I bought Descent, which was the latest version, and then I also then started at the beginning, right? Started at Encounter at Farpoint, and I tried to keep, you know, with my pocket money, being able to stay on top of the new releases, plus at the same time pick up the latter ones as well. I'm pretty sure that I did an entire 5 seasons of DS9, because at the same time that this was coming out, they were also putting out a DS9, and I think I picked up DS9 from the start, from season 1, and I watched it in order. But kind of like my re-emergence into Star Trek, so away from the TV, on an ad hoc manner, it kind of started with Timescape. And I have very vivid memories of watching Descent for the first time. Now, I had, of course, seen Best of Both Worlds before, so I knew about the Borg. I absolutely loved this episode. And in particular, you know, I will see whether or not the second part is as bad as what everyone says. But I really, really do love this one. I don't think that other than Mr. Worf Fire, there's a better cliffhanger in Next Generation, certainly. I'm pretty sure that I can extend that out a little bit further. Because there's everything that is put on the screen on this episode, I love. And I remember watching it, having knowledge of the Borg, having knowledge of lore, feeling that Data's a character that I can relate to. And I just, something about this episode really has had a special part in my memory for the last Oh, what's the number? 25? No, it's not 25. Oh, dear, it is 25. 25 years. So this one's awesome. This is awesome.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Without question. And I'm not going to hear anything bad said about it.
Okay.
Actually, I have to say one thing that's bad about it. And, you know, there's a certain type of person that finds this irritating. And unfortunately, that certain type of person are overrepresented in the Star Trek fandom. Why are the credits before the opener on this one? That they put the credits before the Space the Final Frontier rather than after the Space the Final Frontier. And it's the only episode in 800 episodes of Star Trek that does it. And I don't understand why.
Hmm.
Does anyone, surely everyone's noticed that, right? And it's dug away at their soul and they've got confused and upset about it. Or am I alone here?
Yeah, that's a good point. I never realized that.
What?
No, yeah, I mean...
They might have been trying to try somewhere different to, like, going into season 7. So they might have been trying somewhere different like that. Just, you know, let's try this. It's the last one of season 6. Let's give it a whirl, see what it feels like. You know, it could have just been a purely creative thing.
Hmm. Yeah, I just never noticed.
Okay, so there are a couple of things I hate. I hate inconsistencies. The other thing I don't like about the credits, don't put a credit of someone who's going to turn up as a surprise at the end of the episode, like right at the beginning. And also, don't name your episode Q something if you've not yet revealed that Q is involved. You know, these spoilers and these things get under my skin a little bit. You know, I don't need to be told that, you know, Bob O'Reilly's turning up or even... as Gowron, and then it's only revealed in the second act that he's here, and we're expected to be surprised about it.
Okay. No. The opening credits are longer than Act 1. That's why they did it the other way around.
Okay, where did you get this information from? This sounds like something Memory you Alpha. Must have got from Memory Alpha.
Yeah, Memory Alpha.
That makes sense.
The opening credits are longer... And the
make them
one,
spin so... faster. Like, bloop, 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 bloop. Or relegate the... Look, the dude that plays Isaac Newton does not need to be on the front scroll. He can be at the back scroll. Right? I mean, maybe it was the terms and conditions of him picking up the job. But he doesn't need to be on the front scroll.
That scene doesn't do anything else for the rest of the double parter. So put that scene in and then put the credits after when that scene has nothing to do with the rest of the story. I don't get that.
Well,
it's not even showing a side of Data that we don't already know, because we know he plays poker.
No, I agree with that, and it's not even as if, like, in The Offspring, when they had the holodeck, that it feeds into the rest of the story. Actually, The Offspring. What am I talking about? The Defector. So when they have the holodeck opener, it doesn't feed in the same way. But I'm still not going to hear anything bad about this. You've got Newton talking and Einstein and Data playing cards. What else do you want? You want Cochrane there as well? Is that what we want? Surely that's the only criticism here.
Yeah, but then which Seth and Cochrane would you have used?
Well, I mean, at this point, you only have the one from Metamorphosis to go by, so it's probably best to avoid him.
Yeah, so if they had used a Cochrane in there, then that would have messed up First Contact.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible. He was terrible. Okay, well, anyway, I just realized, looking at information on Hawking, that he died on my birthday in 2018.
He died on Pi weird. Day. We had this discussion at the time, Lou.
Did we? Yeah.
Yeah, wow. We did.
Okay, so anyway, as we open up, Data is playing cards with Professor Stephen Hawking, whom he calls Dr. Hawking. And I know he was a doctor. We'll sort it out. Sir Isaac Newton and Albert Einstein, who seems to have trouble with simple arithmetic. I think that was kind of funny. That's ironic there. A couple questions here. Which title has more prestige, the doctor or professor?
Okay, so the title doctor, first of all, actually, it depends on which country you're in. So that's the first thing to get out of the way. There are different, you know, the title will be used differently across different countries. So what will be referred to as a doctor in Germany is not technically the same as what will be referred to as a doctor in Britain. I can only speak from an England specific, but I think it's the same in the US. But it goes like this. You call someone a doctor that has a doctorate. A doctorate is a research degree that can either be a PhD or an MD. So you'll call a doctor if they've got basically a higher level of academic qualification. So after you've done your bachelor's, after you've done your master's, you'll do your doctorate. A professor is similar, but not related. A professor is just a position at a university. So you can be hired by a university to be a professor in. And so in a way, there are fewer professorships than doctorates, because doctorate is just passing a test. Consider that you pass a test to become a doctor, but then you need to be given the opportunity as a role to be a professor. Mm. And you'll always be a professor at a university or similar institution. So just consider the professorship to be, you know, equivalent to like in the army or in the navy. You get promoted, you get given a certain title. It's not a qualification. So you can technically have a professorship without having a doctorate. I think that it depends on the university as to whether or not they require their professors to hold a doctorate. And there is a little bit of a story of, who was it? I'm gonna say it's Landau, but it probably isn't Landau. It's probably someone else. In fact, I know it's not Landau. But there was this, there was a person who was offered a professorship at, I believe it was MIT, and at the time MIT required anyone holding a professorship to have a doctorate, and this particular person didn't have a doctorate, and he was one of the like founding fathers of quantum mechanics, and they basically told him, look, we have to do something here. So he wrote up a doctorate in 4.5 pages and submitted it. And then, you know, sorted that application out pretty easily. Long-winded way.
Did you say Landau?
No, Landau. Landau is a...
I thought you said Landau. I was going to say that's a TLS episode.
Wow. Okay.
But it wasn't Landau. It really wasn't. Because Landau would have stayed in Russia, I believe. I don't think he came to the West.
All right. And my second question was...
Sorry.
That's okay. He was born in England. Why was he never knighted?
Who?
Hawking.
So Hawking?
He was a knight?
Yeah.
Oh, so okay.
Stephen Hawking got knighted in like 2000 and a bit.
Oh.
I mean, you know, Wikipedia will inform us on this. But I'm pretty sure he got knighted in... I mean, by the way, just to be clear, there are a couple of things. No, it doesn't look like he got knighted. It looks like he only got a CB. Okay, a couple of things just to be aware of. In the UK, you get knighted when the government reckons that you are deserving of a knighthood. Now, the way things generally work is that it is extremely common. I mean, extremely is not the right word. It is fairly common for people to refuse knighthoods. So the way that it works is that they kind of put feelers out and they say, hey, Stephen, do you want to be a knight? And now he's perfectly within his right to turn around and say, nah, not really. So, you know, famously, David Bowie was never knighted. And the story goes is that he was explicitly against that and wouldn't want it. So you can't be knighted against your will.
Sean Connery was a shame.
Whether or not you have like a political objection to the current government, or whether or not you're a Republican and don't want to be knighted by the monarch, it's reasonable that people, not reasonable, it is, it's acknowledged that people push back on these things.
Because I wondered why would they pass over Stephen Hawking, but yet they'll knight Elton John? I mean,
it's a very contentious issue, Luke, because a lot of people think that the honours system is outdated and doesn't belong in the modern world, especially when you get people like who get a knighthood for services to music, which is basically their job. You know, you get people who get like knighthoods for services to acting, and they're an actor. So Patrick again, Stewart. It's just them doing their dog. You know, mm-hmm. it's very contentious issue. They tried to overhaul it by giving like MBEs and CBEs to like normal people, but you don't get a normal person who gets a knighthood or a damehood or something like that. So.
Okay, so I went on record a couple of years ago when the following that I'm about to discuss happened, because they have been... One of the things about the knighthoods and the honor systems is that basically the people in power at the moment are knighting people that they like. So like we had a prime minister a couple of years ago, Theresa May. She gave a knighthood to Jeffrey Boycott because she liked Jeffrey Boycott. And that's it. And Jeffrey Boycott's a cricketer.
Yeah, and you have Tony Blair, who gave a knighthood to anyone who gave the Labour Party £1 million.
Absolutely. So I think Bernie Eccleston was knighted on the back of that. So there are a lot of, you know, people give things to people that they like. So this has always been in play. What has happened is that as people have been growing up, you start to see people's musical choices come through. So I think that most of the Rolling Stones are knighted these days. And the one that I found quite surprising, and I don't want to offend anyone here, but surely you've knighted every single person in popular music by the time you've given Ringo Starr a knighthood, have you not? I mean, is there anyone left out there that's missing a knighthood? Because I found that one to be, in particular, a bit of an oddity. But anyway, that was just me. He was knighted in, what, 2013 or so, something like that. Huh. Not the biggest Ringo fan.
Never got that. Never got that. Okay, anyway, well, Star Trek.
Yep. So the game they're playing is interrupted, and by the way, Hawking won the hand with 4 sevens. How... Curious question. How did he line his cards up? Obviously, they're using some kind of device that holds the cards for him, and when he wants it, drops the cards. But you had to have somebody there that was playing his hand with him to put it in this device.
Well, no, because the holodeck just beamed the card into his hand.
Oh, that could be. You're right. All right. So anyway, back to the show. Red alert! Oniaka 3 is under attack. Who would do such a thing? Well, we beam down to find a bunch of dead people. I mean, very, very dead people in some pretty nasty ways. Who would do such a thing? Oh, hey, let's go open that door over there. Let's see what's in the closet, or whatever that was. So we open up the door, and we find a Borg standing there. And cut to commercial.
Great teaser. Great teaser.
Yes, it was. Great teaser. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we come back after the commercials of probably Calgon, some food commercial or whatever. And we resume with the fierce phaser fight for both the away team and the Enterprise at the same time. One of the Borg gets killed, which pisses off another one. Who was it? Okay, so who killed the Borg? Let's see. What was his name? Do you remember the name? You killed...
That was the first thing that stood out, is the fact they had names.
Right.
So, and no, that's actually, there was killing, there wasn't assimilating. So that was the first two things that you thought, you're like, oh, hang on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he says something like, you killed somebody, I will make you pay for this.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
Which is really strange for the Borg. Did you guys at all think Hugh... I mean, the first time running through this episode, hearing a Borg say, I, angry that one of his friends was killed, did you guys think you?
I didn't. Because
no.
Q wasn't they're not behaving like you would behave. You know, they're killing for the sake of killing.
Right. But later when he says, you know, the one liberated us or something, I mean, even they thought, is Hugh the one? Which they didn't answer. As we find out why.
Okay. So I never thought it was Q.
Hugh, and not Q.
No, I never thought it was Hugh. Okay. And I kind of also thought that, you know, I always felt that what would happen is that Hugh would go back to the collective and then something would happen to it. So, you know, whether that's the complete collapse of it or whether or not it ends up in civil war or something like that. Or whether it just ends up that particular ship blows up and then you move on and he doesn't have any effect. But I never kind of...
Well, we know what happened to him now.
Yes. Yeah. But I didn't think... I didn't necessarily think Hugh. I wasn't thinking, oh, Hugh's going to be the leader of the Borg.
Okay.
In fact, I wasn't expecting a leader. I was expecting, just them to be angrier than normal.
And also, if it was Hugh... That would probably play more into a Borg civil war than the Borg randomly attacking a colony.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, anyway, during the battle, Data gets pissed and strangles this Borg. And while that's happening, the guy who used the word "I" seems to be identifying who he is seeing. You know, human Klingon. Artificial life form, name, Data. And while this is all happening, Will's looking at this going, Will Riker's looking at this going, what the hell is happening here? So what do you think of the battle between the ship and the away team as well?
The away team battle was interesting because they weren't behaving like Borg. The battle in space was also interesting because of the shape of the ship, because Borg ships tend to be like mathematical shapes, whereas that wasn't. So them two things straight away was like, they're not behaving like a Borg, and that's not a normal Borg ship. So you had two flags straight away. And I remember when the first time I watched this, way back when, and there was things that popped into my head, they're not behaving like a Borg, and that's not a normal Borg ship.
No, that wasn't.
Hang on a second. What makes you think this isn't a mathematical shape?
What? That thing was freaky looking.
What's mathematical about that?
Look, in what way is it not mathematical? I think what you mean to say, it wasn't a cube.
Yeah, well, they have a cube, they have spheres, they have hexagons.
Hexagons. Well, the thing is, I was about to say that they generally have platonic solids, but the sphere isn't part of the platonic solids. No, I know what you mean. It's just that even though it's not a simple mathematical construct, it's still a mathematical shape.
Okay.
No, I don't think so.
I'm
looking at
Borg,
this thing.
When the Borg build a ship, they build. They don't build like an arm coming off the side of the main body with a little bit sticking on it and stuff like that.
Typically not.
So it's not a typical Borg ship.
Yeah, that is very. Yeah, it's very.
I mean, you look at all the Borg ships we've seen. You know, apart from the Borg probes, which are basically like a sausage shape. The actual combat ships, the spheres, the cubes, and stuff like, you know, them are recognizable. Shapes. This is like haphazard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have to say I don't like the fact that we get non-cube Borg ships. I think they should have all been cubes. Mm-hmm. I don't see what's okay. Maybe the sphere, in terms of an escape pod, is a good visual in First Contact. But I don't need these weird and wonderful Borg shapes and squished and as you mentioned, the great platonic solid of the sausage. It's not needed. I think they could have kept it more as the cube. The cube is a great shape.
Mm. It's readily identifiable, but then again, had this been a cube, they would have figured it out quicker. You know, they even ask, did the Borg build this? Or did they get it from someone? Steal it from somebody? Okay. So anyway, back on the ship, Data wants to be relieved of duty because of his behavior. And then Picard says, which is too bad because I really could have used him in this investigation. Do you guys think Data really needed to be relieved of duty?
No. I mean, obviously we're watching this in hindsight. And the first thing that popped into my head when he says, I need to be relieved of duty, and he went, okay, is complete opposite to Generations.
Mm-hmm.
Where he says, I need to be relieved from duty, and Picard says, no. You have these emotions, you have to deal with them.
Right.
Well, I mean, at the moment, he doesn't know that it's emotions, right? He just knows that he's, like, reacted in a weird way.
Well, he felt rage.
Yeah, sure.
So that's an emotion.
But also, I mean, isn't in terms of Generations, though, it's he actually put the emotion chip in, turns it on, and then gets a little bit scared. So it's more of a... You know, here it's more of a, there's at least a chance, right, that he's not reacting properly.
Well, he also learned from that, because by the time First Contact comes along, he's found out to turn it on and off.
Yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you be able to turn it on and off? I mean, isn't this, like, one of the easier things to have planned for?
There's quite a few people who would like to be able to turn their emotions on and off. I tell you, imagine, the Vulcans must look at him and think, oh, you kid.
Mm-hmm.
We did a Colin Hard and everything to get rid of our emotions. Data comes along and flicks a switch.
But you know what I don't get is how could he even have had that emotion to begin with? Does he have this emotion chip?
Well, no, but you get the impression that the way that the Borg was looking at him and stuff like that, you got the impression it was something to do with that.
Ah.
From our point of view, but obviously from their point of view, they don't know what the trigger is, and he's had these things before, like when he had dreams.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. So he knows that he's probably thinking, well, there's things hidden in my program that he has to find as he progresses through his life, like the dreams. So he's probably thinking to himself, is it a glitch in my programming? Which is why he goes down and has Geordi run a diagnostic.
Mm-hmm. And as Prochorus, he likes to talk to Geordi about what it's like to be angry, and has Geordi been angry?
Yeah, every episode.
Oh my god! You know, sometimes I just think he needs to just stay away from Geordi, because he goes into these stories and they just get stupid. But anyway,
yeah, Geordi, the man who's in charge of engineering, despite having no man management skills.
No, none at all.
Hang on, have we skipped the discussion with Troy? Because that's a great discussion.
Oh, you're Yes. He does go to see Counselor Troy about it, yes.
Yeah. And Counselor Obvious.
Like, yeah, but it's great. It's like when I've subjected myself to, you know, 16 programs of, you know, designed for erotic stimulation. And he's like, and? Mm-hmm. Nothing happened. Oh.
Yeah, so what did she tell him to do? Go into the holodeck and get a million more erotic things to see if it could happen again. I mean, does that make any sense? Okay, no. I mean, you know what I mean. No, she tells him...
What he should have done, he's going to see the proper counselor in 10 forward.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. The ship's real counselor. Yeah. The one who has a line at that bar. No, it makes no sense that she tells him, well, you know, go get yourself angry again. Does it?
No, I think that makes sense, right? Because he thinks that he felt angry, and he's then now trying to feel other things. I mean, you know, I don't know why. If it's like... You know, Data's a child. Of course he's a child. He's kind of coming in, he's kind of learning, you know, certain things that have been opened up to him. You know, if he thought about this as a child, why would a child that has felt angry suddenly start wanting to feel, you know, glad or happy or being erotically stimulated? You know, keep him with what he was doing before. That's fine.
Hmm. Okay. Well, looky who's back. Admiral Necheyev in all her glory. and she has a message for Picard. You dick. You could have rid us of this enemy, but you didn't. If you ever, ever find yourself... Okay, yes, ma'am. So she's on for what? A minute? 2 minutes? Just to chastise the captain?
Yeah, but she's good.
Oh, yeah, she's good, all right. You know, he didn't offer any water crust sandwiches or whatever. Valerian canapes? Is that what she likes?
I mean, the only reason she's there, right, is in order to remind people of the backstory of Hugh. Because eventually we are going to, you know, Hugh's going to enter into this particular story.
Spoiler and that's really alert!
What?
Spoiler alert! Yeah, right.
Sorry.
Yeah, 30-year-old show. Spoiler alert? Yeah, no kidding. Okay, yeah, you're right there. So, of course, but she really comes down on him to where he has to give her a yes, sir! And, of course, as they always say, shit rolls downhill. I'm doing a lot
Who
of
says
cursing.
That? Who says that? Is that a thing?
What? Okay, it must be a U.S. thing. Shit rolls downhill because Picard goes off on Will for making excuses. I don't want to hear excuses, Will. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. He apologizes, and then he goes on about how he was right here, Will. I could have rid the Federation of a mortal enemy, but I took the moral high road. I guess we could rehash that question. Did he do the right thing?
Of course he did the right thing.
Okay. Now the Borg have become crazies. Here's the thing I'm curious about. Do we... Obviously, this Borg that we encounter here, they splinter off from the Collective, right? Because the Collective isn't going through this, are they?
No. I said this is one thing that some people get upset about. They think, well, you know, we sent Hugh back and then all of a sudden you've got these new Borg. And then the next time you see the Borg, you don't have these new Borg anymore. But my, you know, the way that I explain this, and I think it's pretty clear, is that the ship that Hugh was on had a bit of a malfunction. They then got severed from the Collective and then, you know, Law picks them up and shows them the way of, of being a better new Borg. Whereas I think that the Collective here is unaffected.
Okay, good.
It's like in Voyager when you get the Collective who's disconnected and they set up a colony. So it's similar to that. Once they're disconnected from the hive mind, that's it.
Okay, all right. So, anyway, Data takes Counselor Troy's advice, goes to the holodeck, and tries to get himself angry again, but it's just not working. Holodeck Borg just ain't the same because there's no way of being in danger. So, do I remember correctly that he tried to get Geordi to second his release of the holodeck safeties? So he needs Geordi's help to do it, but yet B'Elanna can do it on her own. Huh. Right?
Yeah, they updated the software after that.
Right.
Well, if that updates the protocol. That's fine. It's not a problem.
Okay, good.
Well, also, right, in Voyager's case, how many senior officers are there? Like 6 or so? It's not as if you've got much choice or much ability to...
No. And in First Contact, Picard turns him off on his own.
Well, he's a captain, I suppose.
Yeah. And that was the E anyway, so software updates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So anyway, but just before Geordi says, okay, I'll do it, we go to Red Alert Battle Stations. Microsoft 1 colony is under attack by the same ship. Well, they just say MS-1, but... I figured it had to be Microsoft 1 that was under attack. They decide to intercept the ship, and while the Borg ship enters what looks like a black hole, what was it, a transwarp conduit? The Enterprise...
Is it a transwarp conduit?
I believe they did.
Yeah. They do, yeah. They call it a transwarp conduit.
Yeah. So, the Borg ship, whatever it is, enters the conduit, and the Enterprise gets sucked in as well. Good job, guys. On the other side, the Borg, two Borg, board the bridge, kill the unnamed nobody in the corner, and they get shot. One of them gets killed. The other one's still alive. Hey, ain't that great? He's alive. Too bad they didn't just kill him, or else some of this episode could have been avoided. But Dr. Crusher saves him. Now, that's the thing I don't get. How did Dr. Crusher save him? Exactly.
It will always be a mystery.
It will always be a mystery.
So actually, if you're being particularly nitpicky, you kind of, this episode relies on this happening, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, Data needs to have been come in contact with a Borg. They need to bring him over. I mean, maybe they don't need to bring him over, but the fact that they've had two skirmishes so far with the Enterprise, it seems like at least that they're trying to engage the Enterprise. And I think Picard mentions that. He mentions that the Enterprise has been the closest ship on both occasions.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's one of these ones where the episode or the story as told only works with a certain number of coincidences, including relying on this infinitesimally small probability that Crusher is able to save someone whose life is in danger.
Mm-hmm. They could have been too in danger. They must have shot him in the arm or something. Anyway, so that's the only way he could have survived. But they put him in the brig, and now it's time to wake him up. Or actually, they wake him up and put him in the brig, and they find out he doesn't have a designation. His name is Croesus, which was given to him by the One. Oh, and we find out they no longer assimilate inferior biological organisms. So that explains why they're acting so strange. What do they consider inferior? Or what do they consider assimilatable?
Well, I always got the impression that they just meant biological, and they were just using inferior as a catch-all. I doubt they mean we're not going to simulate inferior biological organisms, but that Klingon over there is pretty tough. I'm sure they wouldn't have assimilated any of them.
Yeah, but he sucks at his job, but yeah, he's pretty tough, all right. So anyway, while they stand there, I think Picard decides to let Data run with this investigation to see what you can get out of him. But be careful, he's a tricky one, I think. But either way, Data is left alone with the Borg, who, of course, very openly, very obviously, in front of Data, with Data's eyes tracking his hands, every movement, goes to his arm.
They're not alone.
Well, no, there's a security guard in the background. Yeah. That's what
who
I'm
just,
saying.
Who just, lets him get on with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All this action, very obvious as he goes to his arm and presses the button, and then, of course, Data. Oh, boy. I could feel it happening now. That's cool. Hey, nobody could have saw that coming. No one could have saw that coming. But that's where Data begins to change. And he even admits that if he could feel the exhilaration of killing that Borg by killing Geordi, he would do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this makes no sense, and at least it shows how short-sighted he's been here, because it's like, so Data, if you could feel emotion again, would you kill Geordi? So, yes, I would. I mean, he's gonna feel guilty for the rest of his life and sit there on the side crying. That's no. What exactly is his plan here? It makes no sense.
No. What if he did kill Geordi? Do you think he'd have nightmares forever?
Yeah.
I mean, so, is there anyone you care about, Data? Well, yeah, there's Geordi. He tells me all his great stories of life. So anyway, now we're back on the bridge.
And why kill Geordi? Kill someone else. Kill someone that you're not going to feel guilty about.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that makes perfect sense. that's what he wants. That's what he's saying. You know, do you have a friend? Do you have somebody who's the most special person on this ship? Well, that would be Geordi. If you could get that emotion again, would you kill Geordi? Of course he would.
Yeah, but say, I'd rather kill the other guy as well.
Well, he,
instead.
Yeah. I suppose, but, you know, the other guy wouldn't have as much meaning. So anyway, we're back on the bridge, and we're discussing what's happening when all of a sudden a shuttlecraft disappears. It's shuttlecraft left Bay 2. Any guesses? You guys get one guess. One guess only. Who's on that shuttle?
Ooh, I assume it was Wesley.
Yeah. Wesley.
This also does highlight the fact that it's so easy to steal a shuttlecraft on the Federation flagship.
Well, either Worf's panel doesn't get the message for a while, or he has to look at it and go, oh, what's this mean? Oh, Captain, I think somebody's stealing a shuttle. What do I do? I mean, don't you think Worf would just... Does he not have any authority? Does he have to be told every step of the way which to do? There's no, like, running orders. Hey, if somebody ever steals a shuttle and it's not planned, put a tractor on it.
But have you noticed... If you know the Enterprise D, there's actually a door that closes on the shuttle back. An actual door. Right, uh-huh. But have you noticed that every time someone steals a shuttlecraft, the doors open.
Right.
So it's just the force field.
Yeah. So I mean,
Obviously that door has to open. So as soon as that door starts opening, that should come up on someone's panel.
Worf.
Yeah.
He just has to figure out what it means. Maybe he gets a code 54, and he has to look it up in the dictionary.
Code 54, shuttle bay open.
Oh, wait, now we're on a code 87.
Oh, code 87. Captain, there's a shuttle.
You know, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Who knows? Okay, so we all guessed wrong. It's Data, and the Borg. Has the Borg kidnapped Data? Is Data... going willingly? What's going on? And they disappear into the transwarp conduit. So, Geordi says, yeah, I think we could do it. I think we could probably get it done. We'll just do what they did. And of course they do what they did, and they end up in the conduit as well. Get to the other side, and we arrive at a planet where the ship has set down on this planet. What do you guys think of all this one so far?
I think the ease with which they, like, replicated going into the conduit was a bit too easy.
Too easy.
But obviously, you know, you got time constraints because you've got to get it all into 40 minutes and blah, blah, blah. But it also, again, it plays, watching this in hindsight, it plays into First Contact, where they replicate the time vortex to get back. So, you know, obviously... once something's been scanned, yeah, we can do that.
It kind of reminded me of the original series episode where Kirk nonchalantly is doing his log, you know, Stardate, you know, whatever the hell the time and date it was, using the breakaway lightning or breakaway speed around the sun. We have went back in time to the year 1969. It's like it's common everyday occurrence. They just break away from the sun and go back in time. I can't imagine time travel being that easy. But sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's not something they can do. Sometimes the temporal... what was that group? The temporal...
The temporal investigations.
Yes, yes. They monitor time. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean... It's whatever the script says. That's what it is.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like this episode is one of the few episodes where the holodeck doesn't play.
Yeah. So Picard sends a very well-armed away team to the surface. And, of course, they've got a lot of ground to cover. So Picard says, well, hey, let's get more away teams. And I'm, Geordi, you and me, we're going to go down and help them. Do you guys think it was a wise choice for the captain to be down in this situation and not on the ship? No. Well, of course it was. It was a great idea. You know why? Because now we get Dr. Crusher.
In reality, he wouldn't have, because
no,
that ship is still out there.
Yeah. No, you know? he wouldn't.
And Crusher, although Crusher's a ranking officer, she's a doctor.
All right. Well, I think she does hold the rank of commander, right? Not even, yeah. Is it commander or is it lieutenant commander?
Commander. No, she's a commander.
Okay, so I guess since she did, yeah, she took her bridge qualification exams. Have we gotten to that, James?
What?
Where, well, when she does the night shift.
Yes. I don't remember if we've already done that.
When she does the night, are you not referring to the one where Troy gets excited and does her exams?
Yeah but
she did it because
Beverly's doing the night shift on the command deck.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, there was an episode where...
Yeah, there's an episode where Beverly is... Because Data normally does the night shift because he doesn't get to sleep.
Yeah.
But Beverly does the night shift in that episode because she says she has to keep a grade, she has to keep her hand in.
Right. And is that so the episode where Troy does...
Where Troy texts the commanders, yeah.
Yeah, that's thine own self, because Data's not there because he's on the ship. He's on the planet as Mr. Radioactive. and it's that episode. That's a great episode. That's a wonderful one. But no, that's not yet. That's towards the end of season three. Season seven. Season three.
Yeah.
Okay, so we haven't gotten there yet. Okay.
Not yet.
No. This is the first time we see Beverly in charge of the ship.
Okay. Cool. But anyway, what could go wrong? We don't know yet. We'll find out next time.
No, Beverly does fine. She does absolutely fine.
Okay, yeah. Maybe, yeah. Honestly, I'm having trouble remembering part two, so we're going to get to that. So, okay.
And I know...
She's in command of the ship when it's under attack, and she fends them off, so...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she goes into the star, and then she shoots the thing, and then it goes kablamo. She blows up the ship.
Yeah.
She also references the metaphysic shields.
Yeah, they bring that back. And then there's that little ensign that, or either an ensign or a lieutenant that she morally supports and, you know, brings them out of their shell. She does well. She does
excellent.
Yeah. But Beverly does good.
When it hits the fan, then she steps up to the plate.
Well, guess what, guys? We just reviewed part two. We don't have to do that now.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway, final thoughts then.
Yeah, let's go on. All right. Anyway, but Picard does leave explicit instructions that we know will be followed to the T to leave them if anything happens and get the hell away.
They don't.
No, of course not. We're not going to listen to them. That's why Harry Kim does a low Earth orbit to, you know, beam up Captain Janeway. Yes, watching Voyager fly through the sky, that did wonders for the moment. Anyway, Picard's team finds this structure, and they go inside. And what do they find? Some paintings and empty rooms that suddenly get filled up with a crapload of Borg and Data. Which,
this is
Troy
good.
Says...
This is good.
Yeah, Troy says
that. Did you notice the Borg banners?
Yes, the banners. That's what I meant. That's the painting banners.
Did you notice that they were upside down?
No.
Yeah, the banners are upside down.
So are they banners? Are they actually from like the Borg emblem before?
Yeah, it's the Borg emblem, but they're upside down.
Well, okay, I didn't notice that. I just thought there was like a generic thing. But why would they have... Why would Picard not have noticed and then perhaps said, yeah, it's probably best not to be here.
Fascinating. Yeah, no, I Honestly, I don't remember.
I think even if Picard had recognized, I mean, first of all, the obvious thing is why did the Borg need a banner in the first place? But the obvious thing is Picard is he's an explorer first and foremost, and he's a diplomat second. And explorers have an insatiable curiosity, and they like solving puzzles. So he even if he went into the room and seen the Borg banner, he would want to solve why.
So you think he's going, I wonder why there's this upside Borg emblem on the side. Maybe it's the Borg live here.
Well, traditionally, a flag upside down is a sign of rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
So the banner's upside down could have been that rebellion against the collective.
Okay, so so when we say this, let me just ask Lou a question. Lou, are you aware that the British flag is not symmetric? As in, if you fly it upside down, it's a different pattern than if you fly it the right way up.
No, I'm not. The only thing I notice about the British flag is those red lines seem to be... they're not... How do I say this? They don't... follow the same path, it seems like.
Yeah. So it's not.
That's symmetric. All I ever know.
It's not reflective.
That makes sense.
The one side doesn't reflect the other side.
Yeah. So you have a lot of people who seem to get very. It's not every flag that is flown, obviously, is not that's upside down, but a fair number of them that get flown, even on official buildings, they are upside down. And I don't know. There's a part of me that kind of thinks we should just change the flag so it is symmetric, because clearly not everyone is keeping up with the fact that it's not. Anyway, carry on.
They might all be in rebellion.
Pardon me?
They might all be in rebellion.
Well, but it's just that if half your flags are upside down anyway, because no one knows which way round it goes, it might be a rebellion, or it just might be that the guy's got it wrong.
Yeah, you know, the not simple flag like Sweden's, something like that.
Yeah. I think if those red lines were in the middle of the white, it would make more sense, but whatever.
Well, no, because the Union Jack is supposed to represent the different countries of the United Kingdom, so.
Ah.
Okay. Well, kind of.
Kind of.
Okay.
I mean, the blue's them to Scotland and so on and so forth, so.
Interesting. Okay, so anyway, they find a bunch of a crap load of Borg in who they think is Data, but it's not Data. That's Lore. And guess who his right-hand man is?
Okay, hang on. Tell me, you guys, that this isn't awesome, right? When you saw this first time, and it's like, she's way ahead of you, Picard, and then it's like, Lore, and it's like, yes! Yeah. And then Data comes in, and it's like, the sons of Soon are going to destroy the Federation. This is an awesome cliffhanger.
Yeah, this is brilliantly, Will. This is absolutely brilliant. You know, to leave this, and then, like, I mean, what was the gap at the time? Was it 6 months between 6 and 7? In the UK, I think it was 6 months. I think it was 3 months in America, roughly.
Oh, 6 months.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
So we, and then you've got, you know, there's no internet, there's no stream. You can't go on Pirate Bay or nothing like that. You know, this is like First Contact. When, you know, we had the cliffhanger of Picard getting assimilated, and we had to wait 6 months in the UK for the next episode.
Mm. Oh, that's what they do today. I mean, it seems like TV shows only have 12 to 16 episodes, and then you have to wait 9-10 months before they come back.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get too many TV shows now that I've got, like, you know, 20-odd episodes.
Yeah.
It's like 6, 12, 13 now.
Yep. And they make a whole lot more money to do it. Okay, so... And, of course, while all these Borg are coming in, we get Picard, Data, Troy, and an unnamed security guy who looks at, you know, 100 Borg approaching him, and he says, I'm going to fire on one of them. Well, that was a dumb idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, they killed a lot of red shirts in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe he thought it'd be a good idea to just try and shoot them. Okay. But anyway.
So one guy against 50.
Yes. So, the Sons of Soon will destroy the Federation. Are they going to or not? We'll find out next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
I also like the fact that this cliffhanger about destroying the Federation is in the Braden Barden Institute, which was Camp Kittimer in Star Trek VI, for the peace accords. So you've got the using in this one to destroy the Federation. In Star Trek VI, they're using it to make peace. The same building.
Well, okay then. It's a good one. I think I just saw one of the Borg clap, just like I just did. So, okay. All right. Do we skip over anything serious?
No.
Good.
No.
All right. This was only about an hour or so. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Colin, you take us away.
I'll give this a 4. It's a strong episode. It suffers from a bit of padding. The bit at the start with the card game, as fun as it is, doesn't actually add anything to the story. Like I said earlier, we get a lot of things in this. We get Beverly being in charge for the first time. We get two new ships. We get a nice nod to NASA in the shape of the shuttlecraft, which is the Elbaz, which is an American NASA astronaut, Egyptian-American NASA astronaut. You get the 47 in from Stephen Hawking's. And there's a lot of tension built into this episode, and they don't let the tension up, so that keeps it going, because in some episodes they've built the tension up and then it lapses a bit and then they ramp it back up, whereas in this one they keep the tension constant. The problem you've then got, because you're keeping the tension constant, is how do you maintain that in what is traditionally the weaker second half? So, you know, we'll get to that next week. But yeah, it's a solid 4 for me, because it is a good entertaining episode.
Okay. All right. Okay, so me, as I said, I was wrong. This is a very good episode after all. Like we've been saying, I fear part 2 might fall short of part 1, but we will see. I don't know if I really like the Data snaps and wants to kill everybody premise thing, because Data snapping seems to happen too much. Is he really that fragile? And if he is, should he really be in such a high position with so much knowledge and secrets of Federation that all it takes is a flick of a switch to turn him against everything he believes in? That's dangerous. But anyway, I thought the episode was a very good episode. I was thinking a 3 myself, but then I'll be honest.
Sorry, a what?
But as I said, I'll be honest, Professor Hawking gives it a point for me. I like having him in it. He's the only person in Star Trek history that played himself. It was thrilling to see three of the greatest minds in human existence playing poker with Data. That was just thrilling.
Do you know the story about his tour? They give Stephen Hawking a tour of the set.
Oh, I imagine they would. Yeah.
And when they took him to the warp core, he turned around and says, "I'm working on that."
I'm working on that. Wow. That would be funny. I'm sorry to say he didn't get it complete, but yeah, I can imagine he probably had formulas that possibly might get us there, but they went with him. So, but anyway, no, I agree with Colin in the end. This is a 4. This is a good, strong 4, in fact. James, how about you?
Okie dokie. This is a 5 out of 5. Without question, this is a great episode.
It's such a good cliffhanger, right? It's got, you know, actually it's got a great teaser. It opens up, you see the Borg. It's like, whoa, that's the Borg. What are they doing here? It's an interesting Data episode where he's confronted with all of this new stuff that goes his way. You know, I think this episode is absolutely wonderful. And I pretty much love this one. It's just awesome. I don't know what else I can say. It's good.
Okay. All right. So that brings us to the end of season 6, and that only took us 2 calendar seasons to get through. So how did we rate for season 6?
Oh, I'm ahead of you, Lou. I'm sure I am.
Nope, you're not.
What?
No, you're not.
That's a disgrace.
I know. 26 episodes, all of our ratings. Mine came up to a 96.75 divided by the 26 episodes, and I've got 3.72. So for season 6, I rated it at a 3.72. James, all yours added up to a 93.5, which came out to a 3.60.
Hang on. I know that that's not true because I wouldn't have given a half point. So
you did.
Where's my... No.
Timescape. It was the last one. You gave it a 4.5. Don't you remember me saying, wait a second, you never give half points. You gave it a 4.5.
I have no recollection of it. Make up that one to a 5. Half point? This makes no sense. It's so 5. It's a 5.
Timescape? Okay. Well, let's say it was a 5.
Yeah. Put it up to a 5. Okay. Redo your calculations.
3.62.
Okay. Well.
But nobody likes. Yeah. Okay. Nobody likes Star Trek: The Next Generation more than our guests. However, we had 20 guests out of 26 episodes. They came up to a 3.95. So they're close to 4. I'm at 3.72. You're at 3.62. So that's where we are for the episodes.
Mm-hmm. I think it must have been a couple of them that I was very harsh on, like Aquio. And how many ones did I give out?
You gave... 2. What first was Man of the People.
Man of the People, yeah. It sucks.
Yeah, it does. And Aquiel,
Also sucks.
Yep. Let's see. I see you gave 3 twos to Fistful of Data's Quality of Life. And Birthright Part 2, which you gave part 1 a 4.
Yeah.
So, all right, yeah.
Someone's in a grumpy mood.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, let's see how we compare to last year. I improved. Last year I was at a 3.58, and you were at a 3.6. So, you know, you're only 0.02 away. At least you're consistent. That is fun. But like I say, nobody likes Star Trek better than our guest. They beat us every year so far. And, okay. All right, guys. I guess that's the end. So, of course, it's not going to be a surprise anymore after 5 seasons. The 6th season will be on... James, how did we do this? Did we do the movie between the two... cliffhanger, or did we do the cliffhanger?
No, so typically we used to do it between the end of the 5th season and the beginning of the 6th, etc. But I think last year was different. I think last year we did both the first part and the second part in one big show. So we did then the movie afterwards.
Okay. Well, either way we do it. So what I also need to come up with is a grand total of all seasons combined to give us a point value, and I have to figure out how to do that real quick. But okay, that's it. Colin, thank you for coming on. We will see you for part 2.
Yeah, I'll speak to you next week.
Well,
okay,
Bye-bye, everyone.
Let's hope. All right, everyone, take care. Oh, wait. So join us next time as we review episode 1, season 7 of The Next Generation, Timescape Part 2. Or the movie. We don't know what we're going to do. What
it's
is the next
Timescape movie? Part 2.
Oh,
it's
no,
Descent
I meant
Part
2. Descent Part 2.
Okay. And the movie is The Undiscovered Country.
Okay, there we go. One or the other. You'll hear it next time. Good night.
Say good night, James.
Oh, good night.
Good night, James.